The following program was produced by an independent community producer. The opinions expressed do not necessarily reflect those of the ECAT staff or board of directors.
Come to you from underneath a peach blossom. It's time for an episode of Be Awesome. Find positivity throughout your life and work. Just like our mascot rooster, Steve the Jerk.
Hello and welcome to another episode, episode 118 of the Be Awesome podcast. I'm one of the hosts, Joshua Peach, and co-host Mark Resnick, the master of merchandise and guy that joined about 10, 12, I don't know, it's like your 12th episode,
yeah,
maybe something like
getting
that.
There. We're getting there, Adam.
And this is the first in the 118 episodes that I am lost. I'm typically lost, but I'm really lost in this episode. We had 2 hours. We had some changes in plans for some recordings. And Mark and I were originally going to do an episode, which we're still going to do, with the two of us talking about some things. And Mark said, hey, I got this awesome guest. Really good guy. I think we can get him on 3 o'clock tomorrow. Let's do it. So, Brett, I haven't met. I've read just a little bit about him. It sounds like he's got some really awesome stuff going on. And I'm going to dig in and ask all sorts of questions. But I'm going to let you, for this first episode of this kind, I'm going to let you drive the introduction and get us started and then go from there.
I'm quarterbacking today, Brett. So I joined Mark here, joined Josh a few months ago as his co-host, Brett. And we bring on a lot of different speakers. A lot of them are in the education space. But basically, as you know from the podcast, you know, we're all about how to be awesome. If you can be anything, be awesome. We try to bring on some really cool people, and you're one of them. Brett Miller and I grew up together in the town of Norwell, Massachusetts, 20 minutes, 25, half hour south of Boston. Brett and I basically attended middle school together because we went to different elementary schools. And then in high school, I went to a different school than Brett. So we kind of lost track for a long, long, long time. And then we reconnected once we both published books through mutual friends, and we've been partnering together in a bunch of different ways. Brett is an author himself, Josh. He's got this incredible book, Beautiful Day to Say Lives, and it is spectacular. Brett, let's just dive right in. Why don't you just introduce yourself? Give us the commercial, the background on Brett Miller.
Well, I'll make it short, sweet, and complete. Well, by trade, I'm a physical therapist of many, many years, but I am the founder and owner of 110 Fitness, which is the largest wellness center in the world for people with Parkinson's disease. So, you know, that's I'm just chest deep in research and advocating for people with Parkinson's and helping people with all different neurological diseases. Our specialty is Parkinson's, but we have folks that come here with all kinds of issues that could be from, you know, stroke, CTE, MS, ALS, Huntington's disease. We do specialized programming for youth who need adaptive needs, adults with adaptive needs. And we're also, you know, we're an all-inclusive facility, very unique to different specialties, but we're also just a regular gym. You know, if somebody wants to come and just be a better version of themselves, we're here doing, you know, boxing, kickboxing, you know, strength and conditioning, spinning, yoga, tai chi, all the things that you would find in a typical wellness center. So that's kind of where I'm at. You know, I'm like I said, I'm busy doing a lot of things. I serve as the co-chair for the Parkinson's Registry in Massachusetts. I'm also a commissioner for the state of Massachusetts. So we oversee all unarmed combat in the state of Massachusetts to make sure that it's safe for the fighters. You know, I do a lot of outreach for veterans. I'm a veteran myself. And so I do a lot of things in regards to helping veterans who might be struggling, if you will, with all kinds of things. So
great. That's, there's so much to unpack here, Brett. But at first, before we talk more about I've been to 110 Fitness, Josh, and it's an amazing place. I've witnessed the programming up close, the people, the volunteers that he has. Brett calls them cornermen. They're just unbelievable. We'll get to that in a minute. But first, I want to kind of backtrack a little bit and talk a little bit about the book. All three of us, ironically enough, grew up by, were raised by single parents. That's correct, right, Brett? You were pretty much a single parent until your stepdad came into the picture.
Correct.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about the book and how that first came about. Like, why did you decide to write a book, and you know, who encouraged you and all that good stuff?
Sure. You know, like a lot of people, I always had the bucket list of writing and publishing a book. And I always knew I wanted to write a book. I just never had the time to write a book. And I never had the time to really kind of focus and pull all my ideas into what my book was going to be about. And when COVID hit, it was just a silver lining for me. It gave me the opportunity. We were still open because I, you know, was considered, you know, as a physical therapist, I was still able to practice, but our hours were limited here, obviously, because of COVID. But, you know, every night I'd go home and write a chapter, and it just gave me that opportunity and that time to be in that space where it was a little bit quiet in my brain. And I wasn't, you know, balancing 100 things like I normally do here every day. So that's sort of how it generated. And then I talked to some friends who were authors and kind of dove into, okay, how difficult is this going to be? Where do I go in the publishing world? You know, do I write queries and get picked up by an agent? How long does that take? I mean, there's a lot to it, as you know, Mark. And, you know, the bottom line was, is that I had 13, 14, 15 chapters in a heartbeat. You know, everything just, I had it all here. I just needed to get it on paper. And then as you understand writing a book, you know, the easiest part is writing the book. It's all the publishing work and the editing and all that takes, you know, sometimes up to a year just to get that finalized in order to get to publication. And, you know, there was there's a common theme in my book. It's about saving lives, hence the title, and also saving my own life. And so that's kind of the common thread throughout my book, starting from when I was six until I'm here now. You know, crafting this workshop that I do here at 110 Fitness.
Yeah. If you don't mind, it's up to you. We go as personal as the guest would like, but can you walk us through a little bit about some of the demons and things that you had to overcome to, you know, get this book and your life in where you wanted it to be?
Yeah. No, I'm very personal about it. And the reason people always ask me that is because talking about these things is very healing for me on a continuous basis. And you have to be upfront and open to keep yourself sort of humble and to remain, you know, true to what I'm trying to achieve and the better in the second half of my life. So again, the book, you know, talks about saving other people's lives and then kind of dives into some of my experiences in the military and in my personal life that took me into a lot of, you know, PTSD in the military, alcoholism, suicidal tendencies, all of those things are part of my story and part of my journey. And, you know, what it took to kind of climb out of that darkness and what was incredible, you know, being on the other side of that after coming out of that, you know, 2 years of therapy and, a lot of AA meetings and a lot of journaling and a lot of meditation and a lot of just trying to figure out, you know, who I was outside of that previous life. You know, I went into depression. I was on antidepressants. I was drinking with antidepressants, which, you know, is just horrifying. And not being who I was. I mean, it wasn't a, you know, people always ask me like, oh, geez, did you lose your house? You know, did you end up in a divorce? What about your kids? You know, I owned 3 houses. I had multiple cars. I had a beautiful wife. I had a beautiful daughter, but I was a train wreck and my whole life was a train wreck and I was hanging on by a thread. And, you know, I was trying to function that way. And, you know, I was nothing to anybody. You know, I was like your typical, I always talk about like the tornado, like you kind of just go through and you destroy everything and you leave all this stuff in your past that, you know, everybody else has to deal with and you just keep going on. And it's, you know, it's horrible. And anybody that's experienced it, you know, understands the anxiety that's involved in trying to hold that all together. And how you can have a very beautiful life on the outside looking in, but, you know, inside you are just struggling every day from the moment you wake up till you go to bed and you can't wait to go to bed because once you close your eyes, it's over, right? For a short period of time. So that's, you know, again, tip of the iceberg for me. And again, you know, my story talks about, you know, the flip side of that and how lucky I was to be able to, you know, turn that around and then be able to then give back for the rest of my life to people who also may be in the struggle, whether it's alcoholism, drug addiction, Parkinson's disease, or some other, you know, thing, if you will, that causes that. So,
I mean, what? Yeah, you can. I have tons of questions, so you can just interrupt me and if you want. But I keep going.
My first question is, why Parkinson's disease? What guided you to become the world's largest facility?
Yeah, well, my intention wasn't to do that, but it just kind of happened. You know, when you love what you do, you know, and you have a passion, these things kind of happen. But so the quick and dirty, again, the story's in my book. But I was working in professional fighting. I was training professional fighters. I was also working as a physical therapist with people with neurological diseases. There was a very short clip on 60 Minutes with Leslie Stahl talking about her husband and how he was boxing with Parkinson's disease and was getting better, meaning he was able to manage his symptoms better. And I had a whole series of people that reached out to me the day after that 60 Minutes episode, which I had not seen. And they asked me if I had seen it. Of course, I said, no, I don't really watch much TV. YouTubed it. And I was inspired to get involved and start a program. And I started a very small program in a local gym. And I had two people come the first day. And then in about a month, there were about 30 to 40 people standing in front of me, and all their family members were in the back having a, you know, mock, you know, support group meeting, if you will, because they all needed support as well. And at that point, I decided, you know, we need to do something. There's a huge need in the community. And then we moved to this physical space. And at this point, you know, we've been here 6 years going on seven, and we've already outgrown the space probably 3 years ago. And aside, a personal note, my wife's aunt, passed away with Parkinson's disease.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, I'm fascinated by, you know, Parkinson's is one of those diseases. A lot of diseases are those diseases that you don't know anything about until someone either has it that's really directly close to you, or that you're a direct impact, you know, kind of like with dementia and Alzheimer's, you really don't know about it until you have a family member that's telling you the sky's purple and you're trying to tell them it's blue. And Parkinson's is one of those diseases that Michael J. Fox, that's what most people relate Parkinson's to.
Right.
And it was funny that it's kind of funny is for the longest time, for the school Be Awesome started in 2018. I worked for a software company and I was selling some t-shirts and doing some podcasting and things. And I typically knew everybody that bought my shirts and merchandise and things. And I got this text, on May 21st, 2022, from a coworker at the software company that said in Costco and ran into Bill Thompson being awesome. And it's a picture of this guy wearing a Be Awesome t-shirt. And I said, what are the chances? Ha, ha, ha. Please say hello. Can I share this on social media? And he said, sure. How do you know Bill? And I said, Will Thompson just sent a connection request on LinkedIn. What an awesome human that is battling stage 4 Parkinson's disease. I had no idea who this guy was. He randomly found me, bought a t-shirt that I apparently shipped to North Carolina 3 years prior, and he was in Costco. And that was the first person I knew that had Parkinson's disease. And then a month after that, the guy that hired me in 1996 to get into the technology space and software sent me this email and told me how he had Parkinson's disease. And I'm like, wow, you know, I started to do a little bit of homework on it. And he's in North Carolina too. And he actually, his son drives him an hour and a half each way, couple times a week to a boxing gym in Jacksonville. And that's when I learned the power of boxing and the exercise and the things that you do for people with Parkinson's disease, how it makes a huge difference in their abilities, capabilities, their day, their mindset. Because a lot of it's depression too, right? The dealing with this and the inability to do things the way that you used to, it impacts you. And apparently, you know, talk about that, because I don't know enough about it. I know that this boxing gym in Jacksonville is busting at the seams, and this gentleman apparently created some program that's, I don't know that it's unique, but it's some program that it's similar to yours where everybody that's within 150 miles is driving just at the idea of being able to come a couple times a week.
What do you call that? The 110 family, the 110 way. But you tell us a little bit about the, it's not just the gym, it's the whole community. It's fascinating.
Yeah. So I've designed a platform over the years. I call it the 110 fitness recipe. And it is, it is very holistic, but it's also all inclusive. It's not just the exercise piece. So I consult for and do research for Michael J. Fox Foundation, Davis Finney Foundation, Cleveland Clinic, a bunch of all the Boston hospitals. And, you know, the research that we have, the data leads us to high intensity interval training, which really has to be understood as an intensity at which you probably would not work out yourself unless you're super disciplined. And so a lot of these folks are coming in not understanding the expectation or the standard that 110 Fitness has for people with Parkinson's. I mean, you know, Mark, I know Mark knows this, but like our folks do Spartan races. They climb ropes to the ceiling. They jump over 8-foot walls. They're doing 3 3-minute rounds on a heavy bag. I mean, it's no joke. And with my boxing background and my expertise in physical therapy, you know, what separates us, we're sort of the special operations of Parkinson's wellness, right? So we're trying to set the stage and the example for the rest of the world to follow and say, listen, these folks are capable of X. We know it works. I have people come through the door with a disease. And the first thing I can say is, if you stay and you do what I ask you to do, you're going to get better. And so this platform is inclusive, not only of just high intensity exercise, but it has to do with rest and sleep patterns. It has to do with gut biomes and nutrition. It has to do with hydration. It has to do with meditation or, you know, spiritual guidance or spiritual awakenings. It has to do with all these things that are all inclusive that when put together, you can live a really great life with Parkinson's disease. And so, you know, I've developed this over the years. And like I said, we know that it works because we have the data and the research. But most people out there are just doing boxing programs, which is fantastic. Because the one thing that we can't really measure, we're working on it, is the camaraderie in the community we think is probably equally important to the exercise. Mm-hmm. Having a place to be accountable, having a place to be responsible for yourself, meeting other people who are in the same situations, no ego, it gets left at the door. And these people are, you know, going to support groups together, they're boxing together, they're doing other things together. And that just that camaraderie and that commitment to each other it's worth its weight in gold for sure. And we know that because this wasn't measured, but when COVID struck, we lost one person every single week for 9 weeks in a row, and not one of them passed away from COVID. And we truly believe that these folks died of loneliness.
Yeah.
They had no place to go. They had no place to be. They didn't have to be accountable to their friends, and they died. And so we know that, you know, community is part of our platform, and we do a ton of community events, but, you know, all of those things together, it's not just one thing. And just to clarify, you know, you never know who listens to your podcast, but there is other data also.
Everybody listens to our podcast.
It's a global phenomenon.
Right. There's data and research behind other exercise things, dance, Tai Chi, golf, that are out there that also help mitigate symptoms of Parkinson's, cycling. So it's not just boxing. We just have the most research with boxing, and we've seen the most benefit from boxing. So
yeah. I mean, exercise is one of those X factors in life in general,
right?
As a preconditioning of our brains for Alzheimer's or Parkinson's, heart disease, right? It's such an undervalued 20-minute a day exercise routine or high intensity routine. It's amazing. I know the proof is there because Brett and one of his caregivers participated in my book. They wrote Stories for the Greatest Blessing book.
Oh.
And the way she, I forget her name. What's the one who volunteered the year? Deb. The way Deb talks about, you know, her husband didn't even want to go. Mm-hmm. She had to drag him to go to this class. And then later he said it was the best thing that ever happened to him and her.
That's exactly
best thing that ever happened to her too, because she needed that community. She needed that break.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Tell us a little bit about because I know we've I've attended your gala, which is amazing. You raised a ton of money. What does that money go towards, and how does you know, tell us a little bit more about the extracurricular programming that's outside of sort of the fitness program at 110.
Sure. So we host a gala every year. It's for our scholarship program. So when I designed and opened 110 Fitness, my goal was that no one would ever be unable to come or left behind. And so anybody that comes who has any financial struggle or needs some help financially to pay for their membership to come here, we offset their memberships through the money that we raise for the gala. So every September, we, you know, have a great guest speaker and the typical, you know, the auction, the dinner, and we host a large event, you know, live music, and all that money goes towards offsetting people's memberships who come to 110 Fitness. And, you know, Parkinson's is not an old person's disease anymore. You know, we've got 26 to 90 here.
Well, how old was Michael J. Fox when he got it? Because he's had it for...
He was in his 20s, yeah.
He's had it for a long time.
Yeah, he's had it for a really long time. We have a couple folks here who've had it as long as he has. And, you know, I see Michael a couple times a year, and, you know, he's incredible. And, you know, if anybody knows him, I think the reason that he's still so well is because of his attitude. But in any event, the gala is designed for that. And we spend a lot of money subsidizing memberships because we still do have that older population, and these people are on fixed incomes. They've got incurring costs medically, all kinds of other things. So, you know, it's just a really nice thing to do. And again, it allows everybody to be able to come here. We are underwritten by a lot of the foundations and some of the Parkinson's disease associations, some of the pharma companies. And so, this is like drinking from a fire hose, but every month we go bowling. Every month we go to the movies for free. These are all free activities. Every 3 months we do an art workshop. We go rock climbing. We go axe throwing. During the good weather, we go golfing every month. We go deep sea fishing every summer. We go to the orchestra together at Christmas. There's a million things that we do as sort of an organic family outside of 110 Fitness. And those are open to anybody that comes to our facility or anybody that's in our community. So you could have Parkinson's disease and not come to 110 Fitness, but still be able to participate in any of our community events. It's also open for the families of members and their kids, their grandkids. So anybody that's involved can come here and go to any of our community events. We host a couple symposiums every year. We do some veteran symposiums. We also do some educational series pretty much almost. It's slowed down, but usually it's every week we have somebody come and guest speak. Mark, you did one of those. Mm-hmm. So there's always something going on top of all our support groups. We have multiple support groups for caregivers, for care partners, and then also for people with Parkinson's disease. So people can do all that stuff. And then again, you know, we do the Spartan races. We're doing a Green Beret with a Mission obstacle course. We're doing an overnight up in in New Hampshire this year. So anything that's, you know, adventurous and exciting and that these folks haven't done, you know, they're all doing things that they never thought they'd be able to do. And a lot of things that they would never have done even if they didn't have Parkinson's disease. So
how many members do you have?
We're about a solid 100 members with Parkinson's.
And what's the furthest that someone travels?
Yeah, so we have people that come from the Cape, and we have people who come from Boston. Yeah. And then
everything in between. Yeah.
Everything in between. But I do, thanks to Zoom, I do consultations and evaluations for exercise programming for people all over the world.
Yeah. There's about 500,000 people documented, right, that have Parkinson's today?
I would say about a million worldwide. And then the numbers that we anticipated for 2040 mm-hmm. have already doubled.
Yeah.
Wow. I thought it
was. Some of us are calling it the new pandemic.
Yeah, no, I remember the United States, I think, is 500,000.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought it was much more, honestly, because Alzheimer's is like 6 million Americans. It's pretty high.
Yeah.
So I thought they were kind of hand in hand in terms of numbers, but it's crazy, right? What does the research say about why it's become so prevalent. Is it not just about head injury trauma, right? It could be anything.
Right. Yeah, encephalopathy, you know, we think about Muhammad Ali or some of these football players and such who are taking, you know, chronic hits to the head. So we're not 100% sure. We do think, so again, a couple of years ago, if you asked me if there was any genetic correlation to Parkinson's, I would say maybe 5%. Today, I would say like 85%. So we are finding multiple genes. We know about 7 genes currently that are responsible for kind of tripping Parkinson's disease in people. The problem that we're having with the research is A, we think there's probably another 30 genes that we haven't found. And B, you can also be a carrier of one of those genes and not get Parkinson's. So that's kind of the problem right now. The other issue that we're looking at is obviously environmental factors. So you have the PACT Act with veterans who've been exposed to burn pits. A lot of the folks that were exposed down in Cherry Hill to the water and the dry cleaning vents. So you have that whole military piece. And then you have the civilian world, right? You've got pesticides, burning of like firefighters who are exposed to a lot of burning embers that give off like tetrachlorazine and different chemicals. You've got people who work in the printing business, folks who weld, who have burning soft metals. The printing business is a lot of like ink exposure back in the day when they used to do all that. So there's a lot of triggers. And then there's another one that people forget about, and that's like trauma. So a couple examples, if you experience like terrible grief, maybe you're in a horrible car accident, maybe you had shingles, that also we're finding is horrible, like trauma or impactful trauma can also kick off Parkinson's disease. And we think that you would have got Parkinson's disease anyways, but that kind of kicks it off earlier in life. It's like a trigger. So that's where the research is right now. Like I said, the numbers that we anticipated have already doubled. So, you know, like I said, a lot of the scientists and doctors, PhD folks out there doing the research are saying this is kind of like the new pandemic.
Yeah.
Because it's so prevalent.
And the number increasing is probably a big piece of that is all of the exposure parts, right? Because it's
that's
not getting any better for us. And we've already gone, you know, kind of look at, you know, up here, it's manufacturing facilities and all of the stuff that got dumped into the water. And, you know, when we you were just talking about the military base, like Jacksonville gets Lejeune, the drinking water in 1950 to 1960 has triggered all sorts of cancer, high cancer rates and Parkinson's. And that's probably why that boxing gym is probably really busy, is because there were a lot of people that were impacted by that drinking water. I mean, that, I don't know, that to me seems why it would, and the increased population obviously would add to that. But so there's,
and that's why we see the younger folks with Parkinson's, right? Because a lot of them have had exposure in younger years. Whereas typically we used to, you know, call Parkinson's an old person's disease.
It's kind of interesting that, not interesting, it's curious, is that this, you know, 500,000 in the United States, and you're saying 1 million worldwide. The world's a really big place. Mm-hmm. Like how does the rest of the world only have 500,000 and we have half?
Well, for one, if you want to talk about paraquat, which is a chemical that is in Roundup, so we're the only country that still allows the use of that, and have been the only country that allows the use of that. And so there was, and don't quote me on this, I think like a 30% change in the demographic of Parkinson's across Europe when they banned that over the course of like 10 years.
What do we do to get rid of that? Because that's, it's on commercials, it's on the radio, it's in the internet.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it's all about banging on the doors of your local selectmen and then working up the chain, right? So we have a bill, it's called Ending Parkinson's. It's been sitting stale in the House for a long time. And unfortunately, it was just kicked back by the FDA, stating that there's not enough evidence to show that it is one of the issues that's causing Parkinson's disease. So there's a lot of anger in the Parkinson's world, as you can imagine, because the FDA came out and said that just like 3 weeks ago. not enough conclusive evidence stating that it would need to be banned, but yet we're the only country that still allows it. So there's a lot of controversy there with that. So,
yeah, I'm not that smart, Brett, and I have well water on my property, and so we don't use chemicals in our yard, and we're putting clover leaf instead of grass that needs fertilizer and all that stuff. And I was having a conversation with someone, and like asked me questions. I'm like, all right, I spray Roundup or I spray one of these toxic chemicals on my yard to kill the weeds or to kill whatever on the surface. Where do you think that stuff goes? You think it just evaporates and goes away? Goes into the ground, and then it gets into my drinking water at some point, and I'm drinking poison.
Like, well, and if you look at the market, the market of fertilizers and people who have services because they're really particular about their grass. A huge problem. How about just your animals, right? Walking across the grass after you just spread fertilizer and then they just track it in your home. And, you know, there's all that too.
Yeah. Don't get me started on animals. Well, you don't know about my house, but we've got goats and chickens and guinea hens and dogs and cats and rabbits.
Yeah,
and,
that's okay.
Yeah.
So, I have a small.
So, yeah. So we don't, you come to our house. Yeah. We've got guinea hens and chickens that eat all of the bugs. Guinea hens eat 2.5 times their body weight, so they eat all the ticks, ants, and all that stuff. So we don't need to spray, and we don't put fertilizer. We don't have the nicest lawn, but we live in the woods, so it doesn't much matter. But
we're the same way.
Yeah,
a small farm too, and I keep bees, and so.
Well, bees, I got you. We got to talk bees. I haven't. So you're making your own honey?
They're making my honey. Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, but yeah, you got. But I mean, you've got. Have you seen the Flow Hive?
Yeah.
Do you use that?
I don't. No, yeah. I use traditional. Yeah.
So I gave money for the Kickstarter originally, but I didn't give enough to get one of the Flow Hives. I gave like whatever the t-shirt and bumper sticker or whatever. But they've sent me stuff like, hey, this is what we're doing. It's amazing. Do you know what this is?
I have no idea what it is.
So Flow Hive. So you're going to correct me because you're the beehive expert.
Yeah, go ahead.
When you set up the beehives, they've got those trays and you pull off the... So the bees go in the box, and it's literally just a key system that you turn, and it turns the honeycomb that the bees are producing everything. And there's a spigot at the bottom, and the honey just comes out. It's like the easiest way for you to get your
honey.
Sounds
like a no-brainer.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's frustrating the whole topic, because that's one of the challenges of living in a very affluent, successful, capitalistic society, which I love, right? But, you know, we're talking about banning a pesticide that is dangerous, but from the business side of things, what's next? Like, and I'm not arguing one way or another, but like the Tide Pods and the microplastics that are released, there's so many different things that make sense for us to get rid of, but it's not that simple, right?
Well, it's a convenience factor. We're all getting lazier.
Well, no, I think it's much deeper. I think it's the economic factor. It's the anti-business angle that you will be perceived, you know. Congress doesn't want to shut businesses down, even though this is a no-brainer. Do you guys know what I'm saying? This is an apolitical show. Yeah. But unfortunately, we live in a capitalistic society, and we answer to...
I thought you were going to talk about getting upset about beehives, but
no. No, I love beehives. I've been holding this in because, I want to get rid of pesticides. I want to get rid of plastic bottles. We're living to death. But, like, I understand the other side of it, too.
I don't. I don't. Well, no. If it's not good for people, and if it's
okay, but then when it gets frustrating. You can pick and choose what's good for you and what's good, not good for you.
Well, no. I think if studies show, and I'll go to Jesse Itzler, which is how you and I met. He's challenged the CEO of Kellogg's. Give him $100,000 to be on a podcast for 15 minutes to talk about why they promote cereal being so good, and they're finding all these chemicals and all these agents that are bad for cereal. And the CEO of General Mills, I think it's General Mills or Kellogg. You know, is promoting that you should eat cereal for dinner because of inflation prices and all this stuff. And in reality, the cereal is not as good for you as they say it is in commercials.
Okay, that's a good for you, not good for you. That's not going to kill you like a pesticide. Or it's not going to kill the environment like bottled plastic. Why do we have plastic bags? Why is there such a thing as a plastic bag in this society? why do we have plastic water bottles? There's no need for it. But there's an economic factor here, Brett. Am I wrong?
No, not at all.
I'm putting you on the spot.
You know, it goes back to lobbying and money, right? And like you said, and politics, and there's a lot of everything involved in it. Yes,
I could be caught with a plastic bottle pretty easily. and walking with one. I don't like it. I owned a spring water.
No, I didn't.
I owned a spring water delivery business in the late 90s, early 2000s. I told you about Mrs. Singleton. The only reason why I carried small plastic bottles in the early 2000s when Aquafina and Dasani and all these companies came out was for Phyllis Singleton. Otherwise, I would have protested it. I would have used a
recycled plastic bottle. I completely get it.
Because I think that between the what it takes to make it, the fact that it never goes away, the reality that so few of it gets actually recycled and purposed for some reason, it just makes sense. And the right thing is wanting my kids to not have to worry about a lot of this stuff, like what Brett's talking about.
No,
Parkinson's, people get Parkinson's at an earlier age. Let's do some deduction. Where does it come from?
But then you go to Costco and you buy 36 of them for $3.99.
Yeah.
So we're all sort of guilty of this. What's good for the environment, bad for the environment thing. But anyways, I was holding that in. I had to get
that out. I love that you got it out. It was good.
Yeah. It wasn't very smooth. And
Brett just kind of sat back. He's like, well, what do I do here? And I'm the guest. I'm just going to let these two go at it and determine what cereal they're not going to eat and pesticide they're going to put in their grass and why they have liquid debt.
Well,
and this is expensive, right?
Very, very expensive.
Which they just got $61 million in
I saw that.
In investment at a $1.6 billion valuation. So with any luck, they're going to figure out how to drive down the cost of this and start to get aluminum more used and more utilized for clean drinking water. So,
all right. Well, we need to get some of these CEOs on the line here too.
I friend requested them. Yeah.
All right. Sorry to digress here a little bit, Brett, but you know, I am a centrist. I'm right down the middle politically. I just go with common sense in everything, whether it's right or wrong. For me, it's a right or wrong or a common sense issue. And I get frustrated with people on one side of the aisle who just, you know, only give a crap about the money and you know,
lobbyists. I love common sense because it's not that common.
It's not, unfortunately. All right. Anyways, I have so many questions. I know we've used up a lot of your time, but I do want to ask you a few more questions. Adam, is that clock? It's not working. Thank you. The first is, and I just go back from it. My ADHD brain is kicking in a little bit. You never told us like what was the moment, the turning point when you said enough is enough. I have to get my shit together. Sorry. Adam, cut that out.
Yeah, he's good.
I mean, Santa Claus dropped enough.
Yeah, yeah. But
okay. Yeah. So what was the turning point? What was the red line for you? Or, you know what I mean?
You mean like in my story?
Like a lot of people in your situation, PTSD, addiction, like they never make it. Like what actually prompted you to say, I'm gonna be dead if this doesn't happen? Like, was there a moment?
There was a moment, and I talk about it in my book. You know, I was doing the same thing day after day, right? You know, I was living in insanity at its definition, right? Doing the same thing over and over, expecting something to change, and it wasn't. But, you know, I was spiraling worse and worse. Things were getting worse. Things were happening, you know, at my home and, you know, I only had one child at the time. She was three. And, you know, she was definitely obviously not capable of understanding where I was in my life, but yet she knew kids are really smart. Right. And so she was starting to withdraw from me, not wanting to be with me, not wanting to be near me. And that was hard for me to understand, like to accept. And then also, you know, I was, you know, fighting with my wife for no reason, obviously. And, you know, things at my home were not good. So it wasn't really a turning point. I decided to kill myself. So I own weapons. I'll be open about it. A former military guy. So I packed a pistol and some special bullets, and I left my house that next morning and drove out of my driveway with the intent of never coming back. And, you know, people talk about spiritual awakenings or things like that happening, and I'm not really sure if I can put an actual name on it, but I left my house to go to work, and I stopped at an AA meeting, and I sat in the parking lot with my pistol in my lap, and I just sat there. I wasn't sure whether I was going in or not, or in any event, my phone rang, and this guy who was a mentor of mine in AA, his name was Paul, was calling me and asking me where I was and what I was doing. And I told him I was sitting in the parking lot, tickling my tonsils with a 357 Magnum. And, you know, basically, you know, the words I'll never forget. He says, you know, you never have to do this again. I said, you know, you don't have to be alone. He said, come inside, have a cup of coffee, sit down, and let's talk. And, you know, it took me a moment to realize, you know, what he was saying to me. And, you know, miraculously, I went to that meeting. I walked in the door and had a cup of coffee and sat down. And my life drastically changed from that day on.
Yeah, I'm sorry to go deep on you. I know I should have brought it up. But
this wasn't your first.
This is good. I got the tears going.
Yeah, and I don't know you. We just met, so yeah, as far as if I go no too problem. Far, but wasn't your first AA meeting, or it was?
It was not.
So you were.
I bounced in and out for at least a year trying to get my act together.
Well, yeah. The reason I bring it up is we have a large, you know, a lot of our audience is military members, former and current, and it's important to talk about mental health, and we don't talk about it enough. It's a problem in this society, and it's in your book, so I'm not asking you anything that's not public knowledge,
right?
But it's I think it's important for everyday people to share it. It's part of why you're so awesome. Well,
I think the other thing too is it's not just the reality is that, and I do this in every one of my keynotes, is that it's not just, you know, we're putting a lot on military and first responders, and they have the most stressful jobs and why, but the reality is today, and I was just in my Starbucks office a little while ago with a friend of mine. I was talking about how hard life is for kids. I was in a school last week, and a freshman in high school is bawling and crying and anxiety ridden and legitimate. Like, people always say, well, what, you know, how do you know what is legitimate with a kid? Are they just trying to get out of class, or just whatever it is? And this child was legitimately so anxious that she was okay with crying in front of everyone because it just, everything was overwhelming. But the reality is, one in three people in the United States, I don't know about the world, but the statistics, if you take every disease, alcoholism, drug addiction, divorce, death, if you take all those things, about one in three people, Tony Robbins says one in, I think, 2,000 people is suicidal every day when they wake up in the morning. But one in three people every morning gets up that has something traumatic and difficult in their life where they could be thinking like Brett. And that's like, you think about your interactions, 33% of the chance of you talking to someone, they're dealing with something difficult. I mean, every single day of my life, I have at least a couple of interactions with people where they're dealing with significant challenges that could cause them to make a permanent decision on a temporary problem. That temporary problem could last a long time. Like, it sounds like your challenges were a couple of years.
Yeah.
And it just gets to that point. You go, well, this isn't going to change. That's that insanity piece. And here it comes. That's amazing that it is. I find that, I don't know what the reasons for Mark's seen so many things that happen in my life that I call and I'm like, hey, you won't believe this happened, and you won't believe that happened, with timing or someone calling or something happening, make a difference. And the fact that you got that phone call that arguably kept you here. And I'm so glad that that phone call happened, because.
Paul, he's a hero.
Yeah.
Saved my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brett. Did you have your
gym already? Were you already doing all of this stuff? Or are you, so this is all of,
I owned a different business at the time.
So all of this amazingness that you're doing has come after all of this has happened. You just kind of,
yeah, it was, and that's, yeah, that's the whole right story, is that the grace of God,
yeah,
you know, was given to me. I was given a second chance, and now it's my turn to take return the favor to everyone else. So
yeah, and Brett does, he we have a lot of mutual friends, and Brett returns the favor like you do, 100-fold, 1,000-fold, goes out of his way to talk to anyone, to be with anyone. He wrote the foreword to my book. He's just an incredible person, and just grateful that you came back into my life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
That's, you know, I had John Cady on that I knew since the fourth grade, and then you have Brett on since the fourth grade. This is a good, you're a good intro. You're catching on here, and you get some, you get some good history of good folks in your life. That's
well, we're both good people and we both bring on good people.
We try, but, anyway.
I know, I just for our audience, you can get the book on Amazon. It's a Beautiful Day to Save Lives. It's great stories in here. It's a quick read, but it's also very powerful and impactful. I encourage all of our listeners to get it. I know, Brett, you've got some more writing ahead of you. I know you're working on another book and maybe even a movie. You want to tell us about that and tell us, you know, how people can reach you if they want to learn more about 110 Fitness or your personal life.
Sure. Yeah. I'm like you said, I'm available to anybody who might be in the struggle. I'm actually, I have a producer's meeting next week. I've been moving along with a movie, not sure if we're doing like a Netflix docuseries or an actual movie, but have been approached by a couple of producers. So that's moving forward. So very excited about that, obviously.
Yeah,
I am working I'm working on another book. It's about crafting the largest wellness center in the world for people with Parkinson's disease. So it's all about 110 Fitness and individual stories based off of people that I've met here and, you know, a lot of the funny things that come with working with people with Parkinson's. So that's great. You know, if you want to reach me, email bmiller@110fitness.org. I'm sure in the keynotes, you can post my cell phone number. I'm always welcome to talk to anybody on the phone. Invite anybody who ever wants to come and see how magical these folks are and how incredibly resilient and fierce they are with their Parkinson's disease to come and visit 110 Fitness. Just call and make an appointment and you can come in and watch. It's
amazing. It's amazing.
Inspirational.
If drag whoever you need to drag to one of these classes, because it is hard to make that first step in anything.
Yeah.
And for people with Parkinson's or Alzheimer's or any of those, neurocognitive diseases, is that the right word?
Or neurological movement disorders. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, it's just amazing place. And I love how it's not, you tap your military background. It's very like, it's not regimented, you know, but there's a structure to it. There's a rhythm and a role, and everyone, I love how you give everyone a boxing nickname. I want you to think about mine. Yeah. Think about a nickname for me one day. Brett, it's been an honor to have you on the show, man. My
brain's moving. I know I know you're the host. I don't want to interrupt.
But I know.
We got to figure out merchandise, because I just got a text from Marissa Boydie, who was also in the book, and Natalia was wearing one of her shirts, which is
The Greatest Blessing book. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So
do you have a question for Brett?
I did this thing. We got to figure out how to do. They can put this on you. We got to figure out how to do a 110 special shirt where we give 100% of the 100% of 100 shirts, because we got 100 members. 100% of 100 shirts profit to the gala, and we got to figure out how to get a shirt into each of the members.
I'm glad you didn't say 110%.
We don't have 100 yet. Take 110%, but we got to figure out how to do that. That's one thing I want to do. To figure out how we give back and do something cool, because you have a whole bunch of B's. It's like be well, be, but you don't have be awesome. So we got to figure out how to get be awesome on a shirt and
put your
logo on the back. So that's a first thing. But on a serious note, in regards to boxing, there is a you say Netflix. There is a big Netflix match coming up, I believe, in July, between Iron Mike Tyson, who I've met once.
Yep, same. Here.
Scared the life out of me. And Logan Paul, who is this YouTube video turned boxing star, fighting, difference of 20 some odd years. Who do you take?
So obviously, you know, I can't just flat out answer that question, because we also have to look at, like, what is the primary purpose of hosting this fight?
First of all,
there's a money grab by a lot of people. You know, promoters are amazing, right? They come up with all these crafty ideas. Let's bring Ronda Rousey back. Let's bring Mike Tyson back. You know, is this going to be an exhibition fight where, you know, he says, hey, listen, I'll hit you, you hit me, go easy on the, you know, the power, and we'll just drag it out for 12 rounds and walk away with a couple million dollars? Or is it going to be a true boxing fight? Mike Tyson, if anybody knows Mike Tyson, knows his history and knows that, you know, at his age, he can still continue to be as powerful, and he has the skills in his footwork to take down Paul. I mean,
that's what I like to hear, because I just put my money on
one hook. I mean, yeah. Mike Tyson can take a beating. You've seen him with Douglas and Foreman, and you know, this guy is unstoppable. He also is, you know, he's mentally fit, right? He's got so much more experience being in the ring. You know, if you look at it from that side of the fence, I mean, this guy is, you know, packing a serious punch when he throws. And if he connects, I mean, there's not many people in this world that can tolerate that amount of impact. I mean, it's just brutal.
He's got a podcast called Hot Box, and then a lot of it's around, you know, he's got marijuana and all that stuff. But his level of genius with the sport of boxing, like, I grew up as a kid watching him, and he just seemed like he came up off the street and he just beat the hell out of whoever came up to him. I never really thought about the mechanics of boxing until I started listening to this podcast, and you start listening to it, and he knows every punch thrown of every fighter of every match that's ever had, like, the level of research that and homework that he did to understand what someone might do as an opponent is nothing short of extraordinary. It's like Tom Brady level watching the reels and making sure that he knew what to tell, figure out what
some high praise right there.
Oh yeah. And so everybody is saying, you know, he's, you know, a lot of the playmakers are saying it's past his time. Some of the stuff it can be thrown. You know, that's the sad thing about boxing too, right? Is the sport has changed with regard to some of it has felt like it's been teleprompted or played out, planned out, almost like wrestling.
Yeah.
But I my money's on him. That's, I appreciate your insight. I think in a street fight, Mike Tyson could still beat anybody, because he's still in phenomenal shape. He knows his stuff. So I appreciate that, and appreciate you giving your time, and we're going to get to work on figuring out a new shirt program, because I don't get a text like this with a picture of Natalia in the hospital wearing a Be Awesome shirt without that being one of those signs that says we should do something. So check it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's so cool. Well, we do have a sub brand, Brett, that's You Are Awesome. And I think we should do a co-branding, 110 on one side of a coffee mug or something, or a tumbler, and then You Are Awesome on the other for your volunteers, because they are truly awesome.
Yep. That's actually, you know what, you
come up, I can't run the program without them. They're the nuts and bolts.
See, I come up with the high lofty idea, and then he's the common sense guy. He comes back down to ground and he's like, hey, how about the new logo, and how about we tie in with the volunteers and the caretakers? That's awesome. No, that's good. No, thank you, man. I appreciate it. Great to meet you.
You too.
Gonna read your book. Thank you for your service. I was raised as a single child until my stepfather came into my life and going into the third grade, and adopted me in the ninth. And he was 101st Airborne helicopter pilot in Vietnam, tip of the spear.
Hoorah.
And didn't get welcomed home or thanked until, believe it or not, 9/11 of 2011. That's a story we can have on another day. But town of Canton finally welcomed the Vietnam veterans in 2011, all those years later. So I don't know.
Nice.
People question whether you should say thank you or not thank you or welcome home. And I say it all to everybody, and I don't care. So,
yep.
Thank you for your service. Appreciate you. Thank you for your service that you're doing every day for 100 people with Parkinson's disease and giving them hope and not letting them just worry about all the things that it is and get depressed and worry about it. That's pretty amazing stuff. I'm going to need to get out there. And
I was saying, maybe visit. we can do a podcast in the gym.
Yeah, maybe towards the gala.
In the ring. Can we do a podcast in the ring when it's not being used?
Yeah,
I rented an Airbnb in Yakima, Washington, in an old boxing studio that had a bed in the middle of the ring. Why couldn't we have a podcast. Microphone? Adam, can we get mobile with this thing?
Yeah.
That's awesome. All right.
You got to love it when you got Adam in the room. Adam is... I can never give him enough accolades and thanks, but Adam is the man on the mission behind the scenes. He's been on the podcast once, but he is the ECAT guru extraordinaire that takes care of stuff. And anytime I say something, much like Mark, he says, yes, yep, we can do it. So we'll get the microphones in the ring before the gala and get a catch-up talk. So
perfect.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's an honor to be a part of and to be asked to be on your podcast. And I appreciate it for sure.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon. Okay.
You bet. Take care.
Bye. Hey, guys, listen, as I shouldn't say guys, but listeners, as always, we're so appreciative of your time. You know, we're striving to be the best podcast we can be. We appreciate any review you can leave us. You know, subscribe, like us, share the podcast. Most importantly, if we did something that, or said something that you didn't like, or we can do better, please let us know. But Josh, as always, man, if you can be anything, be awesome.
Look at that closing. He's like, and he's got it. And I can come back and say, you are awesome. There you go.
Hey, Matt, partner.
All right.
As always, officially, unofficially sponsored by Liquid Death. We're still waiting to hear from our folks there.
Yeah, one
congratulations on your infusion of capital. And we're just looking to have you as part of our show. We love Liquid Death, and we want to get rid of plastic. So
bingo.
Let's get that in there, Adam.
Come to you from underneath a peach blossom. It's time for an episode of Be Awesome. Find positivity throughout your life and work. Just like our mascot Rooster, Steve the Jerk.